Want complete protection? Try PhytoGuard, the ultimate nutraceutical combo, a great blend of all the top phytonutrients. I developed it, and it's exclusively available at drhoffman.com. Check it out. Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Halpin. Well, it seems like it's turning into a microbiome sort of week because our first podcast of the week that you may have seen already, if you haven't, you really need to check it out. It's with Dr. Martin Blaser on the subject of missing microbes. And he talks about how our overdependence on antibiotics and disinfectants and the antibiotics that find their way into our food supply is depleting our natural store of antibiotics in our intestines and on our skin surfaces and our mucous membranes, and that may have some serious consequences for our health. So he sounds the clarion call for optimizing our microbiome. In the same spirit, today we're going to talk to an expert on the microbiome, somebody who's doing something quite unique. She is Jessica Richman, and she's the co-founder and CEO of an outfit called U-Biome. It's a startup company that uses data and kind of a grassroots effort to compile the data that we need to have to understand the human microbiome. So just as we've achieved a remarkable milestone recently in completing the genetic typing of humans, The genetic code of humans has been sequenced and unlocked. There's a lot to learn. There's a whole new universe of diversity within our intestinal tracts. And understanding that diversity could be the key to unlocking the secret to how we can cure a wide variety of ailments that now plague us. So this project is a very, very worthwhile one. Jessica Richman attended Oxford University. And she is also someone who has had her work featured in Scientific American, NPR, Fox News, ABC. And she's also had the distinction of speaking at TED Med. She is a very, very knowledgeable spokesperson for an enterprise that she's going to tell us about, the U-Biome project. So welcome to Intelligent Medicine, Jessica. It's nice having you as a guest.
Yeah, thank you. It's wonderful to talk with you. I'm really excited about this.
Okay, so first of all, Ed, for some of our listeners who are not acquainted with the microbiome, give us a primer.
Sure. So the microbiome are the trillions of bacteria and other organisms that live on and in our bodies. So we are covered with bacteria. You might think, you know, you take a shower and you wash and then you're clean. But actually, in the shower and once you step out of it, you are still covered with bacteria inside and outside of you. And this is a whole unseen world. It's like a science called it a new organ in the human body that until very recently we weren't able to measure and understand. And now that we can learn about it, we can see how the microbiome can help us understand health and disease at a deeper level.
Well, in the past, you know, I've been involved in studying this for a long time, almost since the beginning of my practice. We talked about candida overgrowth, yeast overgrowth, and we talked about dysbiosis. And the tools that we had to measure what was going on in the gastrointestinal tract, frankly, were somewhat insufficient. They were basically taking a culture and sensitivity of the stool and, you know, sending a sample to a lab, and then they would plate it out on agar plates and tell you that you had this bacteria, that bacteria, and the other bacteria. But apparently that is not the best way to sequence the myriad of organisms that are present in the gut.
Yeah, that's very true. So I think you put that exactly right. It was the best way to do it. But recently, next generation sequencing has made it possible and inexpensive to sequence not only the human genome, but the genomes of other organisms, including microorganisms. So what we can do now is see things that not only are able to be cultured, but most of the things that are important in the human body can't be cultured because they don't necessarily grow on a plate. We don't necessarily have the right growth medium for them. It's been estimated that 95% of the organisms that are in the human microbiome can't be grown in a cultured environment.
They are so-called anaerobic organisms.
Exactly.
In other words, as soon as they come out, they die when they're exposed to oxygen. So really, I mean, the only way to determine what's going on there is, if you could shrink a human down to, Fantastic Voyage and put him into some sort of spacesuit that would keep them protected from all the crap that's in there, then you'd have them, go spelunking in your GI tract and then gather specimens and analyze them while inside you. That would be one way to figure out what's going on.
That'd be pretty cool.
That would be pretty cool. But we can't, since we can't do that, you actually have employed a different approach in sequencing the diversity in our intestinal tracts. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so the way that we do that is, you're absolutely right, a lot of bacteria can't be cultured or can't survive in air or in other, or need certain other things to grow. So what we do is you take a sample from your gut, and by the way, we actually do 5 sites on the human body, and the nose, mouth, skin, gut, and genitals. So we do all 5, and there are other sites as well. I mean, obviously there's bacteria between your toes and other sites too, so we can talk more about that later. But what
Sure.
we do is you take a swab for the gut sample. It's a swab from your toilet paper. You then stick it in a tube that we include in our kit that has lysis buffer in it. So basically it kills, it's a very harsh solution that kills everything, all the organisms that are on the swab. And
so the postman doesn't have to worry when he's carrying the samples.
Exactly.
It's nothing, it's not, we're not talking about biological warfare here.
Exactly. And it's funny, some customers have actually asked, will this sample smell bad? They want to be polite to their postman and not,
right.
Like, yeah, exactly. But no, it's totally, it's sort of indistinguishable from, liquid, let's say, once it's been
talk about junk mail.
Yes. That's really good. I haven't heard that one before. I thought I'd heard every poop joke there was, but
yeah.
that was
well,
really good. So
they didn't even pull that on you on NPR, huh?
Yeah, they did. I think people just love poop jokes. I mean, I think that you sort of have an inner 12-year-old that never gets tired of it, or at least I do. I should speak for myself. So anyways, yes, you sample your – so you stick in the tube. It kills all the organisms that are there, and that's actually good because you don't want them to be growing in the tube, and you want them to accurately represent what was in you or what came out of you at that point in time, not, 2 weeks later after it gets to us.
So it's almost like flash frozen. It's like like freezing a moment in time,
exactly.
Just as it is present in your GI tract.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's a perfect analogy. So yeah, it's frozen in, at that moment in time, you send it to us. It's shelf stable for a really long time in that solution because it's just DNA floating in solution. Then you sort of shake it up to sort of distribute the solution through everything that's in the tube, and there's some beads in the tube which also tear open the cells so that so that the cells are certain to die. If the solution doesn't get them, the beads will. And then you send it to us, and then what we do is we extract the DNA, sequence it on a next generation sequencing machine on the Illumina platform. I can give you more details if you want, or that's techie enough. And then we do some bioinformatics on it to figure out which organisms, we get the raw DNA sequences and then figure out which organisms those correspond to.
Right. Okay, so just to back up a little bit, this project was conceived as what? I mean, clearly there's a dual purpose there. One, it's to provide people with news they can use, but to some extent this is a vast research project.
Exactly.
Because you're trying to, I think they've done some projects where, for example, they took the DNA of everyone who lived in the country of Iceland, and they sequenced
right.
the DNA there. That was a very, very famous project, and you could do that in a small country, and you could say, look, everybody, let's do this. It's not a very diverse population. Everybody is named Sven Larsson or, Lars Nielsen. They're all interrelated. And they determined the genetic composition. They actually analyzed the DNA and figured out all the genetic sequences that they needed to know about. And thus was born, in effect, a vast telephone book or a database mm-hmm. that can aid scientists throughout the world in their research on, you know, which genes are correlated with which diseases and so on and so forth. Now it seems like you're trying to do that with the microbiome, not just stool, as you said, because stool is certainly a big part of it, but also you offer the option for people to sample other parts of their body where there are, you know, like on the skin, there's certain bacteria, in the genital area, there's certain bacteria, in the nose and oropharynx, mouth, there are different bacteria. And these bacteria vary from person to person. They tell us a little bit about our underlying state of health or our state of disease.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very well said. Exactly. And so, you're right. Our project does have two purposes there. So one is, and I think that's sort of the hallmark of the approach that we're taking. We want to open up science so that a lot of people can be part of it, so people can see their own results, so people can be a part of the process of discovery and of creation once we get enough information to be able to create, it's not just gathering information, but to create useful products, services, answers to questions, correlations that can be helpful. We want people to be a part of all that. So it's sort of a dual purpose, which is to understand the microbiome for research purposes and also to provide individuals with access to that research process.
Okay, so how many samples have you obtained so far? How big is your database now?
So we have about 7,000 individuals in our database now, and we have, which is one of the largest human microbiome databases in the world, just to give you an idea of how few of these have been done so far. And we're also part of a number of large projects and studies that we're in the early phases of that will increase that significantly. Turns out that it's not just individuals that are interested in the microbiome, but all sorts of other organizations, disease-based foundations that are interested in asking questions about their specific health issue, chronic fatigue, heart disease. The microbiome is correlated with dozens of different things that are sort of obvious, like, you know, gut disorders of various kinds, and things that are not so obvious, like heart disease or autism. And so there are organizations that are in those areas that are interested, pharmaceutical companies, obviously, a lot of other companies that do research that want to make products that are based on the microbiome. So they want to make products that are antibacterial with or probacterial, and they want to understand what's going on in the microbiome in order to do that. So we're sort of doing both things. We're involving the public, and we're also working with organizations to do large-scale studies with them.
So what conclusions have you come to so far? I know that it's very early in the project and you're still gathering data, but have you discovered, I mean, from what I've learned about the microbiome research so far, it would seem like there could be just like a random distribution of bacteria, you know, like since there's literally hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of different species and subspecies, that it would just be one big scatter diagram. But it seems that there's sort of like different patterns that emerge, you know, in maybe just a few subtypes, you know, patterns where it's either this predominance of bacteria of certain types or that predominance of certain bacteria, and that you can actually draw some inferences about the relationship between certain patterns and the risk of certain diseases.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's, we found some things in our data set that also correlate to published research. We've been able to duplicate some results on a larger scale with more data in our data set. I think the most interesting thing about that is that the microbiome, what you learn from the microbiome is about patterns, like you said, and ecosystems. So it's not, you know, oh, you know, X is here and that's the bad
right.
bacteria.
Because in the past, yeah, what we said was, you know, oh, you have candida. Oh, you have yeast. So we'll give you like nystatin and we'll kill it and then we'll make you all better. Or, oh, you have this bad bacteria. If we kill this one bad bacteria, everything is going to, it's not that way. It's more like a pattern of maybe deviation from optimal that would be involve many species or a whole shift to a different type of bacteria.
So that's a very good point. And there are different kinds, there are different ways that can express itself. So sometimes that's a wholesale shift where there are just more of a certain kind overall than another kind. Sometimes it's a really, one of the interesting things we've discovered with some gut disorders, and this is not, you're sort of, this is still sort of in the research process, but is that there are certain bacteria that are present in massive numbers in people that have specific gut conditions. But it's not just one where it's like, oh, you have that one thing, let's kill that. It's, you know, five different species that seem to be way more prevalent in people with specific health conditions that are, you know, present, but not at such rates in people that don't have those health conditions. So, sometimes it's a shift, sometimes it's a presence of many different things, sometimes it's the vast absence of certain things. Like you can see after someone takes antibiotics, as you might expect, you know, you take them for your sinus infection or, you know, something that's totally unrelated to your gut, but obviously they work systemically. So, you know, your gut microbiome will just not have whole families of bacteria.
Right. So, for example, lactobacillus, that seems to be something that is generally thought to be a healthy bacteria that might disappear entirely, or beneficial species of E. coli. E. coli, mm-hmm. you know, we tend to think of as a killer.
Right.
And if it's, you know, contamination of meat with bad E. coli can give you devastating, you know, not just Montezuma's revenge, but can actually put you in the ICU with kidney failure and shock. But actually, E. coli of the right type is essential and normal. And people who don't have enough of the right type of E. coli are in trouble, right?
Yeah, exactly. No, it's very interesting that I think we're just sort of moving to another phase in our understanding of human health. And I think this makes sense with a lot of other things we've learned about, you know, taking a more holistic approach, understanding the sort of context. And I think this is true here. Now we have a better tool that lets us see the context. So we can say, oh, it's not just, you know, here's E. coli and that's the sign that you have X and we should kill it and then you'll be fine. But here's this whole pattern of things. Let's look at them all in context and then use that information to adjust the ecosystem and then see what the results of that are.
Right. So people, you know, are very much desirous these days of report cards, health parameters, you know, these electronic devices that you wrist devices and so on that report on every internal parameter of your body and give you feedback on what's going on. I think that's going to be the coming thing. So obviously this could be an object of fascination for people. Give me a report card on my poop. Give me a report card on my armpit.
Yeah.
Give me a report card on my vaginal secretions or, you know, what's growing on my skin.
Yeah. It's really true. I mean, I think it makes a lot more sense. It's funny. I sometimes go to quantified self conferences and gatherings, and people are measuring, you know, how many steps they take and everything about their diet, and you know, taking all sorts of blood parameter, you know, having their own tests done and things like that. And I think it's a good trend overall. I think it's very early to be able to say, oh, well, this is clearly correlated with that, and here are the, you know, here's what you should do about that. But I think it's a wonderful trend that people are taking responsibility for themselves and that they're doing it in a very data-driven, quantitative, thoughtful way.
So in terms of news you can use, people who, you know, might get a report card that says, wow, you know, you have a really beneficial pattern. Your pattern is associated with normal metabolism. People who have your pattern tend to be less obese, have less allergies, have less gastrointestinal infections, fine. But what if you spot an abnormality and, you know, can you tell people, oh, wow, you know, this means you really need to change your diet. You need to eat more fiber, or you need to stop eating as much meat, or you should reduce your sugar and carbohydrate intake, or to the point where we can actually make a practical recommendation or perhaps even take probiotics.
Exactly. Yeah, I think the initial product we came out with was, you know, here's what's in your microbiome, which was interesting in its time. You know, a year ago, that was like, wow, you could never see what was in your microbiome, so now you can. But I think you're right. I think the next phase for our product going forward is to have much more specific answers to specific questions. So I think a good example are antibiotics. We can tell whether or not you've recovered from the antibiotics that you've taken recently. So you take antibiotics, you know, you can see that whole parts of your microbiome have been killed, and do they come back? Are you back to where you were beforehand? And I think that's really interesting because, like you said, you can use that to determine if you should take probiotics, if, you know, you've been feeling a bit off, if that is perhaps, you know, in the GI sense, and is that part of it, or is it totally unrelated? We can sort of give you information based on that. I think the next stage, though, which should happen fairly soon, is a much more clinical approach to this, where it's not just, you know, here's your health information, here's stuff about your diet, but something a little bit more, with a bit more heft that a healthcare professional can use also.
Well, clearly, and, you know, I can envision this, you could actually have issues with the FDA and the FCC, you know, in terms, the FTC, rather, in terms of, you know, advertising the product as a diagnostic product, before, you know, they may say, well, you know, so often they will say, well, the science on this is half-baked, so you can't tell people anything about their health based on this test. They already did this with 23andMe.
Exactly.
You know, people who are getting the genetic tests, the self-tests, they basically slapped 23andMe on the wrist and said, no, you can't be telling people all these things about their health because while the science is there, it's not to the threshold where FDA is going to approve these claims. Are you sort of grappling with that issue?
Well, we're very careful at this point, and I think we should be. I mean, I'm very sympathetic to the FDA's mission to promote public health. They don't want people making decisions based on data that isn't there, isn't valuable. I mean, with 23andMe, I think from my understanding, what they were most concerned with were things about were about the BRCA gene, where people, you know, that are when they finally have the BRCA gene, people might go off and do something crazy.
Yeah, to do some like celebrity thing, like Angelina Jolie.
Exactly. So that was the concern. And I think it's important to be careful of that, while at the same time encouraging scientific exploration. So I think it's definitely a matter of making sure that if you're going to be making health decisions based on the data, that it has the scientific backing that it should. And if you're going to be making more lifestyle decisions, you know, what should I eat? Should I take probiotics? Things that are a little bit less you know, medically fraught, or I'm not sure if that's the right term, but a little bit more less medically implicated, then that information should be done. That should be taken in a much more in the context of research and in the context of finding out things about lifestyle as opposed to a clinical diagnosis, which should definitely be at a higher standard of proof.
Right. I think that's the key is, and the same the way that they regulate the supplement industry, they'll say, you know, you can say that this supplement may support a healthy whatever cardiovascular
right.
system, but you can't say that this product is great to treat angina. You know, which
right.
is a medical condition. That's a medical claim. You'd have to go to a much higher level of proof to show that that's true. So you can't say, gee, based on your stool test, you know, you're 100%, you're going to get colon cancer or you're going to get
right.
Heart disease. So you better mend your ways. And here's some handy dandy probiotics that are available via mail order
right.
to restore your balance in your intestinal tract. I think that might attract the ire
yeah,
of the powers that be.
And I think rightly so. I mean, I think it's important to be. I mean, I think the public needs to get useful, good information that's been clinically validated. At the same time, the public needs to be able to get the information. So I think we're kind of aiming for a hybrid here, where people get their own data, they get to be a part of the scientific process, but they're not getting data that's meets diagnostic criteria, and there's sort of disclaimers and warnings all over the site and all over the package and all over the results, because we don't want people to be making medical decisions about, you know, before we have the data to support them. But once we do, we definitely want to share that with people.
Okay, this is Jessica. This is a good inflection point. At this point, we're going to pause. This is part one of our discussion of U-Biome. It's spelled U, capital B-I-O-M-E. It's a project that's underway to map the microbiome of the intestinal tract and the body on as many people as they can amass. And our guest, Jessica Richman, is telling us about it. When we return in part two, we're going to talk about who might be specifically interested in getting some feedback, what medical conditions or health issues or lifestyle issues you might want to get some feedback on via your submission to U-Biome. It's a fascinating project, and I endorse it highly. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Stay tuned for part two of our discussion of U-Biome with Jessica Richman. This is Intelligent Medicine.